1350 KMAN.
Good Monday morning. Welcome to In Focus. Brady Bowman with you. It's my last Monday in Focus. Only got three left, but it's a good three In Focuses we have. Two after today. That's right. Well, I mean, we're just starting this one, so I'll still count it as three.
Okay.
But we got a good one. We're going to have C. Clyde Jones and USD 383 school board member Katrina Lewison will be in. And after that, we'll have Flint Hills Volunteer Center Executive Director Lori Bishop will be in. But first, we start off with Dr. Neela Boyer of K-State Vet Med. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
How you doing? How's your Monday starting off so far?
So far, so good. It's nice out there this morning.
It is a lot different than it was a week from now.
That is very true.
Or a week ago. Yeah, that was awful. Really, we haven't seen sun since yesterday, it was pretty sunny out.
Yep.
So, it's so nice. I'm loving it. And, you know, speaking of the flood from last week, this kind of fits in with kind of your topic in a way, and a lot of things we're going to talk about that are kind of related to disaster preparedness.
Right. Yep. So September is National Preparedness Month, so we have to think about not only ourselves, but also our pets. And so unfortunately, we saw that firsthand last week, and so it was, for me, the first time that I've been kind of on the ground seeing that sort of response, and it was remarkable and heartwarming and really, really sad all at the same time. So it sort of brought home to me the importance of preparation for those sorts of things. So we see that today. Everybody's preparing on the East Coast. So unfortunately, we saw that on a local level. So I want to talk a little bit about some of those things. So kind of coming back to Hurricane Katrina and Sandy, which where we've seen these on a really national scale, and the numbers. So of course, there are estimates anywhere between 250 and 500,000 animals that lost their life in Katrina alone, let alone Sandy. So in 2006, the Pets Act went through Congress and was enacted that really starts to put some funds but also importance upon making sure that the pets also have a way to get out of the home in those situations. So we know that there are thousands of people that will not leave their home unless they have a place for their pets. So it becomes really important to make sure that people are evacuating and keeping their pets safe as well.
Here with KSU Vet Med, Dr. Neela Boyer. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, give us a call, 785-537-1350. The phone lines are open. And I know one of our reporters, Nick McNamara, he was, you know, really kind of on the scene Monday, and he made some notes, and I think he, on Twitter, maybe even Facebook, had a few pictures of some cats that were rescued, and right. And that was a big part of the operation.
Yeah, we had cats and dogs and several families that were displaced for a week almost, that they were kept in a Red Cross shelter. So we were very fortunate. So I'm on the board for Kansas State Animal Response Team, or KSART, which is an organization here in the state of Kansas that it represents folks that volunteer their time to be able to kind of get on the ground in these situations. So we're lucky here in Manhattan to have our own response trailer that's kept. So we have these around the state, and so these have supplies in there for animals when they are displaced in these settings. So we were very fortunate to have the Red Cross allow us to be able to come into Port of Hall to the shelter there and to work to establish a shelter within a few hours. We had everything squared and ready to go. So that was pretty remarkable to be able to be a part of that and to see what good that did for those people that were displaced and the comfort that their animals gave them in the shelter, being able to stay with them, which was quite a remarkable setting because most of the time that's not the case. So most of the time the animals will go to a separate shelter than the humans. So that, of course, can be challenging, but that is the way it is many times in certain places. So it was a little unique here what we were able to accomplish.
Now, a lot of these disasters, it's hard to be prepared for anything
right.
Anyway,
yep.
Especially some of the flooding issues that we saw at Wildcat Creek. But when it comes to preparing for your pets, so what's kind of step one in that?
So step one, I think, is to try to have those stickers on your windows next to your door, so you have the number of pets you have in your home, emergency contact information, so that if you do have somebody knocking door to door, and if there are pets there, they would know that. And then if you have time to write the word evacuated on the sticker, that can be very helpful, so that those first responders and those people that go in there afterwards know that there are no one left in the building. But I think you have to think about it on our scale. oftentimes here we're facing things like flooding or tornadoes. So these are very unexpected, in some regard, emergencies as compared to a hurricane that's coming in over several days or a week or more. So having a plan in place. So the first thing is to make sure that your pets are up to date on their vaccinations, because they may not be allowed in certain shelters, or they would have to immediately be immunized upon coming in, which of course can be a level of stress. So keeping them up to date, having a to-go bag. So I think a lot of people recommend like a brightly colored backpack that would be kept with like a luggage tag on it, which has your phone number, contact information. And then in there, for us especially, I think having a waterproof bag that has your pet's veterinary records, any medical information, having any medications there for at least a 2-week supply, and then rotating those or checking them monthly and making sure that they're in date. Having usually up to a week's worth of food and water for them. If you're keeping, you know, canned food, making sure it's a pop-top can for the animal, or having a handheld can opener so you can get into those things. A lot of people will take even like those roasting trays for the aluminum ones for cats for a litter pan, and a quart-sized bag of some cat litter. So those are all things, making sure that your pet has proper identification. Microchipping becomes really, really important here. So having your pet microchipped is a permanent identification, so that if they do get displaced away from you, having that form of identification can be critical to being relocated. And then having a lot of people keep a photo in there so that they have a picture of their animal if they become separated from each other, making sure you've got your phone with all those up-to-date contacts for your veterinary office, making sure you've checked to see locally if there's any hotels that take pets, so if you have to leave your home quickly, where can they go with you and stay together if possible. So those are a few ideas. I know a lot of people also advocate for keeping even a pillowcase so that if your cat has to quickly be placed into something to get them out, making sure your pets are used to their carriers and having one for each animal. So sometimes dogs are not used to being crated, or cats are not. So making sure that you work hard to accustom them to the being in the crate, or working with your veterinarian. Some pets do require medication in order to be in a crate for a prolonged period of time. So having preparation in hand for that.
Here with Dr. Neela Boyer with K-State Vet Med. Again, phone lines are open, 785-537-1350. And Dr. Boyer, what I'm really hearing, it sounds like, with a lot of what you just listed, I mean, that's some work you need to do. That's something you can't wait until the disaster to come.
That's right. And so you can go online to places like FEMA or the American Red Cross, have some preparation things for humans, but also like ASPCA and some on there, they also have lists that you should keep in mind when you're evacuating your pet as well, so that you have all those things in place. And so looking periodically in that bag and saying, okay, what's expired, or, you know, making sure that nothing is expired, ideally, having a first aid kit in there so that you have all of those things at the ready. And then also remembering after the fact that some pets can go through a lot of trauma after this sort of event, humans as well. So that calm, reassuring voice, I think that was one of the things that was very heartwarming to me, to see those people that were sheltered over this last week and the comfort that their pets brought to them while they were in the shelter. I think it was, I saw the stress on a lot of people's face when they first arrived and not really knowing what to expect. And as soon as we got those kennels set up and we had an outpouring of support from the community. We had a lot of the companies and private individuals that donated things like pet food and cat carriers and litter. And those were things that, for me, I mean, it was within hours of all of this, and that was all coming in. So it was a blessing to be a part of a community that has that kind of outpouring of support.
We've seen it all over the place. So over the past 7 days now, and you talk about microchipping, and that's becoming, I assume that's just becoming more and more common practice.
Yeah, it is. It's really common practice. And so it's a pretty simple procedure. It can be done as a routine office visit. It is a bigger needle. So for some pets that are quite nervous, sometimes we do talk about having them sedated or even doing it. The optimal time is when they are spayed or neutered. They're under anesthesia already and they don't even have to feel it. So certainly other people advocate to do it at other times, and that's fine. So it is something that's really important. The return rate to animals is much, much higher when they're microchipped, and especially cats, because of the fact that they can, you know, run and hide, and then they end up in a shelter. And it's a situation where when you've got hundreds of cats and you're trying to look through and find yours, or you don't know which shelter they may have been placed in, it can be really hard to find them. And a lot of cats don't always wear collars and tags while they're in the house. So many of them enter into a shelter with absolutely no form of identification at all.
And how does that process work? Like you mentioned still through a needle.
It is, yep. So it's a little grain of rice size chip that goes through a needle. So it's out of convention, we put it sort of between the shoulder blade area, and it only takes a couple of seconds. Most pets tolerate it extremely well. So it's something that I would absolutely recommend for all pets that they have that in place. So it's common for animals to come out of a shelter with one, but we see more and more now that people are coming in just for that if they don't have it done prior.
Is it an extremely costly procedure?
No, it depends on your clinic, but it is not a terribly costly procedure. It'd be something, just have to call the clinic and see on average what the cost is. There's different options too once the chip is placed. Some of the companies have also a kind of a Amber Alert system, for lack of better words, where for a period of time, or if you pay a registration annually, you can have them, they will send out flyers to the clinics within a certain radius of where you're located when your pet's missing. So it's an immediate effort to try to find them as soon as they are lost. A lot of them also give you access to the pet poison control centers as well. So there are some other benefits that can go along with microchipping as well.
And I'm sure just some sort of scanning device
that detects
the microchip.
That's right, yep. So there's a universal scanners that can scan even for our chips, for example. Even though we place one company's chip, our scanner can scan any of the other chips that are on the market. Another thing would be people that travel with their pets. So a lot of the countries for international travel, it's required to have them microchipped well in advance of travel. So it's something that, especially having a military base nearby, it's much more common here that I see it being done.
Just a lot of those things that you don't really think about normally.
Right. Yep.
Here with Dr. Neela Boyer with K-State Vet Med. Just got maybe a couple more minutes before we get C. Clyde Jones and Katrina Lewis in the studio. If there's some other things you want to go over real quick.
No, I think those are the big things, is just trying to go online and visit those sites that give you a list, and then working through. This is a great activity for kids to get involved with too, that, you know, want to help out in getting those kits together and then periodically going through them to make sure everything's in date. So I think it's a good family activity or exercise.
Here with Dr. Neela Boyer, just a couple more minutes before we have C. Clyde Jones and USC 383 school board member Katrina Lewis in. We'll also have Flint Hills Volunteer Center Executive Director Lori Bishop. Dr. Boyer, thanks so much for coming on.
Absolutely. Just keep in mind, don't leave those pets behind. They need to go somewhere too.
Appreciate all that information.
Thank you.
More in Focus coming up.